Welcome, everyone, to the Bridgestone Canadian Superbike Championship podcast. Myself, Marshall Ferguson, alongside Colin Fraser. This is the round two recap. We had a heck of a weekend out at Grand Bend. Congratulations to everybody who went, competed. I put out something on social basically saying how much fun the event was, how competitive so many of the different classes were, not just sport bike and super bike. And it certainly felt, Colin, like one of those super memorable weekends that I don't want to say come out of nowhere, because we said going into this round that there was going to be lots of fun things to talk about. But when you end up throwing in some of the wild cards and the locals and everything else, and they really show out, and then you go all of Saturday, we're staring down bands of rain coming off, and we see the dark sky just up the lakeshore from us. And on Sunday, the rain said, yeah, I'm not doing that thing that I did on Saturday where I let you guys just get the racing in and then it starts to pour. We had a little bit of everything this weekend. What was your overall takeaway from Grand Bend in round two?
I had high expectations for how things were going to go there in terms of being entertaining and unpredictable. It often has been. One of the most interesting races we ever have had was the very first race we had at Grand Bend. And, you know, the problem is the more races you have and the more you hope that it's going to be entertaining, you know, the law of averages is they're not always great races. But those were, I think, pretty much all really entertaining, interesting races. And in the end, what we're trying to do is present entertainment. And, you know, in my opinion, the unpredictable, no offense to the Jordans, Oaks and Ben Youngs of the world, the unpredictable is really fun. And, you know, for the fans to not, unless you've got one guy you're locked in on, it's really interesting to see a variety of things. And it's, you know, it's funny. I joke with the video staff that, you know, we stand in the rain and are wet and miserable, but the person sitting on their couch at home isn't worried about that. And I got home and I was tired. I had some friends staying with me, and we thought, oh, let's watch the F1 highlights. And as soon as the show, the half hour repackage started, and you can see it's raining, I sit down on the couch like, okay, this is going to be great, right? And I immediately prove the point that wet races are just almost always great entertainment.
We will get to this in a second as well, talking specifically about, obviously, the, you know, winners and losers of the weekend and moments of the weekend and all this good stuff. But it's the exact same thing that you're talking about. I was basically sitting there, you know, the rain comes just as hard as it possibly can on Sunday, right before the GP Bikes Pro Superbike feature class went out. And so they pull everybody back in and they got to go deal with tires and the bikes and everything else. And, you know, we get the starting procedure, which is, okay, we're going to go out for five, come back in, and then get ourselves set and go out and see what we can do here with this race. And somebody said to me, man, this feels kind of chaotic. I go, yeah, rain really mixes things up. And I go, and by the way, you know who really likes the rain? And they're like, no. And I go, Trevor Daly. Trevor Daly's a big fan of rain because he's really not afraid to ride pretty much the same way that he was. We'll get to him in the success that he had on Sunday in a second. But I want to ask you this, because you mentioned, you know, high expectations in Grand Bend. What do you think it is about Grand Bend Motorplex that actually makes for great racing? Because I was thinking about this actually as I was riding home from the event, where, you know, you kind of, you're contemplating different things and about the way that the weekend went, because, like, we know that Mossport CTMP has these crazy over the top of the hills and down through the valleys and the camber and everything else. What is it about Grand Bend? Because the place is primarily, I mean, I love walking the track with my dog each of the mornings that I'm there on site. And this place I've walked a variety of different times over the last 2 years being around CSBK. And it's just so interesting to me that it has certain parts of the track that just seem to generate these incredible moments, I guess, like even down into one, whether it's the short shoot between the final corner on the start straight. I mean, what is it to you that you think really created some of this exciting entertainment for people that were in person?
Well, we don't have a lot of very fast flowing tracks, as much as everybody really enjoys riding on those kinds of tracks and looks forward to them. Even most ports, you're barely into sixth gear on a superbike. So I think that the stop and go nature of the track, most of our riders are strong in that area. And I also think it's a place where, and we're primarily talking about the two feature pro classes, where a disciplined rider, and most of our top guys are pretty structured in what they do, where the pass is to exploit the small mistake that was just made in front of you. And because we have shorter straights and tighter turns, then, and the pass is basically a get underneath the guy on the brakes, right? To take away the line. In motocross, you might call it a dive bomb. Optimistically, most of the time, it isn't played out to that aggressive a level, but we saw some of that too. But the other thing too is the riders are all pretty realistic that that jam on the brakes up the inside, sweat it out, move them over, particularly at the first four turns, which we call the bus stop. And as is typical in Canada, that's right where everybody's watching. So most of the tuners, most of the fans, most of the teams, they're seeing that particular aggressive structure of how they race. And you get further away and it flows. And, you know, the launch, you know, Ben will tell you the launch onto the back straight, and particularly the trip through the carousel is really the centerpiece of building the lap, because it's a little bit faster, and faster areas, you can make more time if you're disciplined in your approach. But the stop and start is what really ends up being everything at Grand Bend.
The launch out of that corner on the backside down the back straight, being able to see that, whether it's from the grandstand or, you know, if your eyes are good enough, just seeing it from standing at, you know, field level, at track level, is pretty amazing. And I think part of this that, again, I was thinking about that really was accentuated by the rain on Sunday in the superbike races and those that followed after the rain started to come down, is the fact that you can see people under braking at the end of that incredibly fast back straight, but then they go in behind that tree line, right? So it's almost like the mystery of it adds to the entertainment of, you could see Trevor Daly, Ben Young, Sam Curran, Jordan Zook flying down the back street. Oh man, he got a good jump coming out of that corner. You see the speed build up, and then you get this 2 or 3 second window of who's going to be hardest on the brakes, who's going to try and lunge down the inside on that wide sweeping right-hander. And as they come through, you don't know until they all of a sudden come bursting back out onto that front straight. And it's kind of, from a psychology perspective, as a fan, it creates a level of, there's speed, there's mystery, there's entertainment, and there's the sudden rush of, did he get him? Did he not get him? Bang, come around the corner and all of, oh, right. And so when you get that time after time after time, especially with the racing that we got this weekend, the competitiveness of it, it seems like that, again, was just accentuated, whether it was rain or not.
It's interesting because when you can't see the whole track, and of course at places like Canadian Tire Motorsport Park, you can't see the whole track, but it's you kind of get into a numbers game. You know, five guys were in the lead group, away they go. When they reappear, the first thing you do is count, right?
Yes.
And at Grand Bend, it was happening a lot that, oh, we seem to be one number short of where we were when I saw these guys 15 seconds ago. And a lot of it happens either into the carousel on the very hardest braking, and it's pretty bumpy on the entrance there. That's what caught out Elliot Vera on Saturday's Econoloop sport bike race. But also the corner, the fairly fast left-hander onto the front straight is bumpy. And if you are very, very aggressive looking for lap time there, the way Trevor Daly frequently is, it's a place where things can go wrong and people run out of road there. So those are, you know, two turns on either end of the, or two sections on either end of the carousel where a lot of stuff happens. And from the main viewing area, you don't see that part of the track.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's you know what, you mentioned Elliot Vieira there. I'm going to begin, I guess, our section here of reviewing some of the things that we'll weave into, you know, who won the races and what the stories were. But I hate that I'm making Elliot a loser of this weekend. The reality is it was a tough weekend for him. And you end up basically not being able to finish the two races in sport bike, and seeing him come back the second time on the Sunday was pretty heartbreaking, because he goes off in turn one, and it's the second day in a row where his bike is banged up and all the rest. And again, you're talking about the unique setup of, you know, turn one and the bus stop and all the rest, where everybody's basically watching it from there. And he ends up getting off the bike and just flipping his visor open and starting to undo his gloves and just put his head down and walked directly through the crowd. And they, whether it was the medics that were there to check in on him, or if it was fans or family, or there were multiple people that were just, hey, oh my goodness, are you okay? And it's, you don't typically get that where you're walking directly through the main grandstand area. And Elliot, because of where he went off, which is a high action area, as we've said, walked right through it. And it was kind of heartbreaking because he just walked right through the grass field past the podium that he very likely could have been on either of those days in pro sport bike, because he was on pole. and having him not be able to finish. We all know that the talent, the skill, the bike, like he's got all of these things that I think will show out as the season goes on. But that was just a really, really tough weekend for him and his experience. And it was kind of punctuated in my mind. You know, we're not talking about our moments of the weekend, but that is a moment that sticks in my head, is him walking past the podium, undoing his gloves with just his head down, going, "I can't believe I have another race here that I haven't been able to finish."
Well, he was expected to do well at Daytona this year, and a variety of family issues kept him from going. Arguably, that let him be better prepared for the start of the Canadian season because he didn't burn through a bunch of equipment at Daytona as some of our racers did. But he was looking forward to battling Tremblay for the championship, for the title in the middleweight division, and that was realistic. And in terms of pace, that's definitely what we're expecting. But the downside to this is we're barely, we're four races into the season, and Tremblay's in a solid lead, and Tremblay doesn't make a lot of mistakes. So for Vieira, I think now it's a rear guard action. It's looking for wins all the time, and I think that's a very strong possibility because Tremblay is not going to stick his neck way out going at it with Vieira. And it's interesting because the two of them have both marched forward in terms of their program. And we focus more on Tremblay because particularly at the first race at Channeville, the battle with Ben Young and the high mark, the grade at which they were performing. But I think Vieira's had a good year. And, I had a conversation Sunday morning with Tremblay, and we were both saying, Vieira had to try, right? He had to be in there with two laps to go, and it's frustrating. And it was a little bit harder on Sunday because he wasn't racing for the lead when that incident occurred. But the issue isn't that Elliott Vieira isn't a good racer, can't ride a superbike, and also he's one of the more flamboyant and exciting guys. He's fun to watch, and he's on a Ducati, so he's carrying that flag too. So hopefully we go to Edmonton very soon, and he's never been there before, but most of the guys haven't. I think the track suits the Ducati. We'll see.
The other part of this, I guess, Colin, is that anytime that you have somebody who slides down the running order, whether because of performance or crashing out, you're going to have other people who will jump up in. And obviously, again, Trevor Daly goes on and does the Sunday double, which is very impressive. But Zoltán Frást being able to climb up and throw himself into the fray, what were your takeaways from his performance, I guess, really on Sunday, but also the weekend as a whole?
Well, it's another step. We're watching a number of the younger racers in sport bike, the middleweight division, to see. And, he isn't a rookie pro, and we've talked a lot about those guys. And, for instance, Sear had another big step weekend, and he's the one that the focus is on because he's from a family of racing and he's coming in with two amateur titles. But Frast is continuing to build. You got guys like Playford who are marching forward, but maybe not as aggressively. And the problem is there's so many people making steps in that division that you have to ride so well and move so far race to race, day to day, to stay on the radar. And, Frast got two podiums. Yeah, there was a little bit of attrition, but, at Channeville, John Lang benefited a little bit from attrition. And, I think everybody thinks highly of Lang. They think he's a solid guy who's building a career. When he qualifies ninth, that's where he was in sport bike. That shows you how strong that field is. And also, a fascinating battle that Frast is a big part of now to be the top of the old school bikes, right? The Kawasaki inline 636 Ninja, old type first gen rule bikes, because the belief is those bikes are still competitive, but the second gen bikes, the GSXR 750s, the Ducati and whatnot, are certainly having their time in the sun. Everybody was so scared of what was going to happen last year, but this year it's happening. There's enough time on those bikes, and Tremblay in particular has pushed the agenda.
When you were talking about being able to have, Frast and Sear and what they've been doing against each other, they had a heck of a battle, right? Like we were looking up at the front. It's Trevor Daly, I believe, was up there with Vieira for a while, and Tremblay, and then sitting in that 4-5 spot for a while, it was Frast alongside Sear, right? And that to me was super, super interesting.
Yeah, and Sear literally seems to be getting better every time we see him. There were some changes there. They had the engine they meant to start the season with, so a little bit more power. But I don't think that's key to the effort. I think his riding is just improving and his confidence is high. Now, the interesting thing about Sear is they are definitely trying to bolster their program. They're phoning and call, you know, they're doing anything they can to meet people. Do you have a bike? What can we do? He's ridden a Ducati recently. He's ridden a ZX-10R X-Zoke Kawasaki Ninja. Yeah. And, you know, they're looking around and they're going to keep at it. And they're going to find opportunities because of the way they are choosing to handle this, you know, this step in his career. And, you know, he's still a teenager. And if they keep going the way they're going, he's going to win a race soon.
Speaking of winning, do you have a winner from the weekend that you would like to point out?
Well, it's easy, but it's Daly because he's not committed to running the full season. He's busy with a lot of different things. Completely lost in the shuffle of the Trevor Daly story is the fact that the end of last season he was injured, right? And severely injured. And yeah. I talked to him briefly at the end of the day Friday, and he said, you know, he crashed in sport bike qualifying, and he was amongst the pace setters, and definitely in qualifying was pushing hard, and he fell on his right side, and that's the side that he hurt at Shubenacadie. So he said he was happy that in his mind that's not as big an obstacle. But you know, for Daly to do as he yelled on the podium, the Daly double, right? And that it was pretty funny. And you know, have that kind of an effort in those circumstances, and that, you know, that rain win was a superb effort, and he made some good decisions at the time he needed to. The sport bike win was a little messier, but it was still very exciting. And, you know, selfishly, those races are going to be good television, and that's always nice. And it's funny, you know, we're going to Edmonton. I'm pretty sure Daly doesn't plan to go, but he was at Edmonton before and did well. And, you know, Tremblay's been to Edmonton, Zoke's been to Edmonton. And after that, pretty much new for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. First to six to first, and still being able to be Collins winner of the weekend is pretty amazing to see that come to fruition. But one of my other losers of the weekend that I should point out as well here from the overall experience is just going to be Spiders. Because when Daly said that coming in after the Superbike victory and doing the double, that he was stepping on spiders all week. And I spoke to him back in the middle of the week last week, and he basically was saying, yeah, weather looks like it's taking a turn for the worse. And I went, oh, really? I haven't seen it. He's like, yeah, love it. Like it seemed like he was kind of hoping to have a little bit of that chaotic, you know? And so when that wall of rain came out of nowhere, he must've been the happiest person on the entire grid to be running back to his pit and trying to figure out what he was going to do in terms of, you know, coming out for that 5-minute warm-up and all the rest. But then in that warm-up 5-minute section, didn't he have a moment as well? I believe like where he was wobbling around or end of the front straight or.
Oh, no, he had a couple of adventures, but he got more time in that 5 minutes. I think he was ready and going harder, faster. So, yeah. He was mentally prepared. It's also interesting, you know, the spread in the dry when Garand won on Saturday between the best lap times was, you know, 3 or 4 one-hundredths between the three of them. And in the rain, it was about 10 seconds slower. And I'm just looking here. Daly did a 1:12.9 in the rain. So he was the only guy in the 12s, but Young and Garand were in the very low 13s, and the pole was a mid 02. So not that big a drop off given how hard it rained. And it shows A, that those Bridgestone rain tires are strong. We knew that, but also that they hang in really well. And, you know, they did the warm up and the race. And I was looking at the tires after the race, and, you know, I would say Daly's tires were a little more used up. That's not a complete surprise because he rode pretty aggressively and needed to ride aggressively a couple of times. But yeah, I mean, the consistency and the tightness at the front is pleasing. It's not good if you want to try and pull back into a battle, but Trevor accomplished that.
Yeah, absolutely. The other, I guess, winner in all of this in the big picture, when we're talking about the end of a round here, as we're completed two of them, is the idea of being able to have essentially Ben Young notice, okay, Trevor's going, but if Trevor's not running the full schedule here of all of the rounds, Ben's like, I got to go do everything and anything I possibly can in order to essentially lead the people that are going to be in the championship hunt in this spot. And you could see that urgency in Ben in the rain race on Sunday, whether it be Garand or otherwise, where his lap times just started to pick up and pick up until he got into that two spot. And then he was like, okay, I'm in a good spot here. You know, I can ride this out and be smart. It's not that he wasn't trying to track down Trevor and go and get the victory, because as we know, Ben is not afraid. We saw this in the final round of Shannonville last year, to throw his head in to any spot in order to, you know, whether it be send a message or just punctuate his efforts. But I feel like the championship wise, I would say, approach of Ben Young and being a veteran guy who understands the bigger picture, that to me was kind of one of those subtones of Sunday throughout all the craziness of the rain.
Well, it's an interesting thing with Ben Young. You know, I still hold him up as an example of what the potential speed is, that he's most likely to yield a pace that's accurate. And he's been in sport bike this year, so he can do it in both classes. But yeah, you're right. He doesn't need to win all the time. You know, I've played up that I think he was trying to win all the races. He's not going to do that this year. He's no longer in the sport bike. And, you know, it's nice that Sam Graham won on Saturday with Ben second, his teammate, although they're not out of the same truck and trailer, and you know, another teammate who built the bikes for Daytona, those two Suzukis, won on Sunday. So you know, it didn't hurt him a lot in points, but you know, I don't imagine he's thrilled. He's used to winning, and I think that a couple of things didn't break his way, and I think he has some ideas about why that happened, but I don't necessarily seeing him be as generous. You know, Grant has his first win. Daly has his first win. Those guys probably don't need more help from Ben Young. If indeed they had help from Ben Young.
Right. And I would say that he did a lot of being a very good teammate, whether that being a Daytona teammate to Trevor Daly or being a BMW teammate to Sam Grant. And yeah, I agree with you. I think this is the part of the season where it's going to switch from, you know, I was doing the things in Japan at Suzuka, and then I, you know, I come back and I'm a little tired trying to get the body clock right and do this. And then these guys go on, they get their victories. And I think he's just going to go to Edmonton and be like, it might be like race number two in Shannonville was, where Ben just checks out and says, like, after he had that sport bike crash, okay, enough of this. I am who I am. I need to prove who I am. And he might just go crazy when we're in Edmonton. But again, it's one of those places that not a lot of people are familiar with. So we'll see exactly how it turns out.
Well, when last we were in Edmonton, Jordan Zoke was riding for BMW, and he was the guy in the series. The year before, Christy had won, and Christy had been to Edmonton. But Jordan showed up. He hadn't been to a regional or anything like that. And Friday morning, he threw down right away. So had never been on the track before and was way under the lap record, faster than Christy had gone the weekend before the regional. And at that point, you know, Jordan was Ben Young, maybe plus. And there wasn't a lot of thought that he was going to have a lot of tough opposition. And, you know, there were other people like Christy and Tremblay at that time in Superbike who were going to have good races. And some of the locals did very well and up their pace. But, you know, our expectation is, even though he doesn't know the track, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if on Friday morning, Ben Young is the fastest guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get into our moments of the weekend. What jumps out to you is something that you will take away when we're looking back 5 years from now about a moment of round two in Grand Bend?
Well, we discuss always about the locals, and we have touted them in various ways, but particularly Steven Nickerson, who's had some mechanical issues and some health problems and sometimes hasn't ridden or doesn't go to all the races, and at one point had a lot of Honda support. And, you know, this was a big weekend for Nickerson in terms of proving his ultimate pace. And I think that they should be pleased with how that went. But nonetheless, you know, crashing very late in a race you were going to win. And, you know, we're all making such a big deal about Samuel Garin, and rightly so. But if Nickerson had won, that would have really been something. And also interesting, because of the Honda situation at Grand Bend, because the arguably the strongest product currently, when we take Trevor Dion out of the story from Grand Bend, is David McKay. And, you know, David McKay is the official Honda guy, but we have three very well-supported dealer support Hondas competing at Grand Bend, all in the top 10. Chris Pletch looking really good, too. McKay didn't have the weekend he was looking for, but he had some good pace. So, yeah, good for Honda. But, you know, we're back to regular service. We expect the Honda we're going to be paying attention to when we go to the next round is David McKay. And, you know, they're marching forward. They haven't had too many problems. His confidence is rising. And I have this notion that he's getting more and more comfortable thinking he belongs up with those top four or five guys, that that's a place where we can run. And we did see him run in the dry briefly in that position right with Jordan Zoke. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I spoke to David at the end of Sunday as everyone was packing up and getting ready to get out. And he was, I think, disappointed in his weekend, but very much like Shannonville, he's very hard on himself. Like, he has set a standard already out of the box that I think I appreciate. But again, from a sports psychology perspective, it's like, man, he beats himself up because he wants to be up there. Like, he wants to be running with Ben and Sam and Jordan and consistently. And I think because he set that standard for himself, it will happen sooner rather than later. He is going out to Edmonton, so I'm excited to see what that's going to look like when he gets out there and how he lines up, as we say, with Ben, who's probably going to set the fastest time very, very quickly once he's there. You actually touched on what is my moment of the weekend, which is the locals. And when Nickerson crashes out, who did he get a ride back with? It was Chris Plutch. To me, that was in a place that had so much home support and the local fans were fantastic, and Southwest Marine and Power Sport being able to have the kickoff event on Thursday evening. And there was just this great kind of local vibe to it, where you're walking down the paddock and it's like, well, I haven't seen that person before, this person. You start talking to some of the locals. They go, man, Pletch laid down a 102 back at the regionals here last week. And everyone was kind of buzzing about all of this. And then to see Steven Nickerson go ahead and really, really challenge, like, that Superbike race one battle between Nickerson being fastest, kind of weaving his way towards the back half of the track where I know you were watching from, correct? Is that back corner. And then you would see Ben launch and head down the back straight. And any time that Nickerson was able to even keep it relatively close, every single eyeball on the front straight was looking at who was going to break first going down there. That it was incredible theater, but Nickerson ends up crashing out. And to tie this kind of all together, it's the idea that, okay, who's he going to ride back with? Another local guy, another Honda. And I thought that was, you know, when they came back in, it was extremely memorable for me, not just because it was the storylines of those guys, but the crowd genuinely reacted. Like, it was a pretty awesome crowd for that Superbike race one on Saturday. And to see him come in and get basically appreciated for, hey, you didn't win, you didn't even finish, but you entertained the absolute hell out of everybody here. Because, you know, whether you're a Ben Young fan or not, or a family member of Sam Curran or not, or your eyeballs were on, this dude has jammed himself in the mix around them and is going to try to create some chaos here. He did so, so well. And again, these guys are so hard on themselves. He probably won't come away from this weekend going, you know, I had a great weekend, this was fantastic, because he wanted to finish the job. But man, there were a lot of people in that grandstand that when he came in on the back of Pletch's bike, he was extremely, extremely, I would think he would feel some of the gratitude from the crowd, because there was a ton of it.
Yeah, he's a deep thinker, and I hope that he did see that there was recognition for his efforts. It would be a shame if he didn't. You know, the dailies of the world engage with the crowd and get the love back. And you know, everybody has their own personality and plays out their own way. And Nickerson is, you know, not that Daly isn't technical. Daly is very, very well versed in how these bikes work, and it's fascinating to talk to him. But Nickerson is a computer-oriented guy and has come a long way in terms of setting that bike up. And you know, that Honda that he rides, nothing else on the track sounds anything like it, and it's quite interesting. He told me at times he actually adjusts the electronics from turn to turn, which seems like a distraction, but good for him.
Well, I had another conversation, speaking of the Honda stuff, I had a conversation with McKay, I think on Saturday, where he was telling me about quali and his predictive lap timer on his dash. He was coming through the kind of the carousel at the end of the back straight, and he said, I looked down and I was actually on pace for pole at one point, like very late in Q2. I said, sorry, you were going through that section and just glanced down and saw that your predictive lap timer actually had you in that spot? He goes, yeah. And then he goes, I came out of the final corner and I looked down and I just didn't do well enough on that final spot, kind of coming out of that bumpy final. But yeah, the idea of anybody adjusting things or even glancing down for more than the slightest bit of information just absolutely blows my mind.
Well, and I think a lot of what we know about this, we know from car racing and F1, but those guys are sitting. It's a lot easier. And I mean, in MotoGP, it's extreme because they get messages on their dashboard. And I can tell you, I was around when the first dash timers, which don't provide nearly as much structured information, came along. And half the time, lap to lap, I forgot to look. And then you're trying to remember what was that last good lap I turned. So it's one thing to have access to the data. And we joke, like at places like Shubenacadie, where on a superbike, the break point to go into turn one is the start finish line.
Yeah.
It isn't really until you're on the back straight that you have the time to look at your data, which is half a lap after. So whatever mistakes you made the lap before in the first half of the lap, you can't deal with and correct. So these guys are learning, and I think it's a little bit from video games and stuff like that, but they're learning to work with the data as they go. And you know, at a high level, at a World Superbike or MotoGP level, that's a skill you have to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. That is going to do it for us breaking down the moments, the winners, the losers, a great round two in Grand Man. The last thing I want to ask you before we get out of here is just a little bit of historical context, because I always like picking your brain on this stuff. And I like throwing curveballs at the end of podcasts just because it's fun. Michael Dunlop being able to set the all-time TT wins record. You and I had a brief conversation about the Isle of Man TT and, you know, some of these you had maybe visions in a previous life of being involved more heavily in something like that, but to be able to essentially take the Dunlop dynasty over there to a completely different level for one of the more famous or infamous events in the world motorcycle racing community, just wanted to get your thoughts on the fact that, yeah, going past 26 wins seems wild. And I know there's more races now and all that sort of stuff, but that seems like a hell of an accomplishment.
Oh, it's a fantastic achievement, and he's a Trevor Daley type character, right? He's definitely an I did it my way guy, and he has not always ridden the bikes we thought he would. He's switched teams during the weekend. He's changed tire manufacturers on the fly. I mean, he's an independent guy. I don't particularly know him. I know his older relatives, one of whom very famously has passed away, and have seen, well, fortunate enough to get to see those guys race. And the important message, in case somehow you missed it, is that the Irish street racers are absolutely as tough as nails. You just can't imagine what these guys put themselves through, and they are, they have a level of focus that's pretty astounding. And I think he's deserving of that record. And I think it's almost a little bit like, you know, for a long time, we never thought anyone would eclipse Crevier's record. And then Jordan Zoke came along and is miles ahead of where Crevier got to. I don't know how far Dunlop's going to go, and it'll depend on his bike choices and that kind of thing. And he rides there more than most. He rides there at the classic stuff in August. And I think that helps because his shorthand on the track, which is so important for a track that's that difficult, and it's so easy to mix up sections of the track, he has that time on the track, which is, you know, always important for all racers, but when the track's 37 miles long, it's absolutely crucial. So, yeah. You know, the funny thing is you could argue that although he's racing at the Isle of Man, very difficult track, he's maybe safer because of the amount of background and knowledge he has compared to almost anybody else in the race.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I do love the idea of the synergy of the weekend being Isle of Man and Michael Dunlop and Trevor Daley, where it's like guys that do it their own way, right? Like it's a great point by you, Colin. I did see, by the way, if anybody wants to check this out on YouTube, there's a YouTube short. I just went to YouTube yesterday and searched Isle of Man 2024 because I wanted to see if there was some highlights and a couple of things here and there. And the first video that popped up, probably because it was going viral and I didn't even know until I searched for it, but was Michael Dunlop had a visor issue. And the one side of his visor popped out somewhere on the track. And so you can hear somebody with a phone and he rides right towards them and you hear, nah, 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 nah. And he goes down the gears as hard as he can, throws the brake on, and he starts basically trying to smash his visor back into the clips in his helmet. If you think your job is stressful, watch this video and it will make you feel at peace for how incredible he is. Essentially trying to cram it in, and he's shaking because he knows how much time he's losing with every attempt to put the visor back in, and he's doing it, and then he just screams because he knows he can't do it without taking the helmet off, takes the helmet off, you don't even see the bike that goes past him, meow, and he's got his helmet off, and he crams it back in, throws it on his head, puts his gloves back on, basically doesn't even touch his bike before, and he's just completely gone. And I'm like, that is the most stressed I have ever seen someone, and he is an expert at what he is doing there. And I just, it was incredible to watch that video because I'm watching it and I was cringing going, oh my God, this guy knows how much time he's losing doing this. And he's so angry and so stressed.
So a little context, the races are long. It's summer at the Isle of Man. It's very buggy. They stop for fuel and it's a debate what to do. Do you change your visor? Do you change your helmet? Helmet on and off is tricky because the faster the track, the tighter you want your helmet to be. So at the Isle of Man, your your helmet is work to get on and get centered and comfortable on your head. And of course, getting your gloves on and off, that's not fast anymore either. And you want them to be comfortable. There's a number of cell phone videos from both sides of the track that cover that incident. Where he stopped is very fast and the bikes are going by at 180 miles an hour. And so that's just, you know, crazy stress. And then the guy I feel sorry for is the guy in the pits who changed that visor because he didn't get it in right. And he represents that helmet company. So I can't imagine what those discussions are like. And I mean, my attitude was always change the helmet because you don't have to deal with the visor. And, you know, some visors click, some do up, you know, we discuss all the time, you know, are you sure it's on? And I, you know, a couple of times, pretty much everyone who's ever raced has had a visor problem and there's not a lot you can do about it other than come in.
Yeah, I agree with you. My first thought on that, aside from the stress of it, went to, oh, the person who put that visor in. That's got to be just such an incredibly terrible feeling. But this has been a lot of fun breaking down round two in Grand Bend. Colin, thank you as always. We are in Edmonton under 2 weeks now. We're about 12 days away, 11 days away from being out in Edmonton. So 1 weekend off and then right back at it for what should be another fantastic round of Bridgestone CSBK action. We'll talk to you soon, okay?